Hey, it's Jed Hearn, host of Wizards, Warriors, and Words. If you're enjoying the writing advice on this show, you might like my new podcast, The Jed Hearn Show, where every week I share the best fantasy writing advice that I've learned from publishing 3 fantasy novels and a best-selling video game. There's over 12 episodes that you can listen to right away, including my top 10 fantasy books of all time, how to make fantasy names that don't suck, 2 rules that make writing effortless, and my complete summaries of Brandon Sanderson's and Neil Gaiman's writing classes, and much more. Check it out by searching for The Jed Hearn Show in your podcast app.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to Wizards, Warriors and Words, a fantasy writing advice podcast. I'm Jed Hearn, author of The Thunder Heist, and I am joined by my co-hosts, starting with Rob J. Hayes.
Hi, I'm Rob J. Hayes, author of Along the Razor's Edge.
And Michael R. Fletcher.
Hi, I'm Michael R. Fletcher, author of Slack Bone Skirt. Wait, that's not what it says. Blackstone Heart. There we go.
I know. I think you should now use the other title.
Slack Bone Fart. Oh, I like that one better. We'll go with that one. Yeah.
And then what
you
should
do. It has a very visceral feel to it. You can almost smell it.
Yeah.
Before we go down that track.
Get your nose right in the book there.
On that track before we started recording, and now we're swiftly off the track, but the track was pulling us back towards it. For this episode, we are going to be talking about books. Surprise, surprise. Who would have thought a bunch of writers would talk about books? Hardly ever happens. I was thinking we could do a favorites of 2021. So favorite books that we read in 2021, not necessarily books that were published last year, but books that we read that year. And we can also talk about, favorite movies, favorite TV series, maybe favorite nonfiction things as well, or any other general favorites. You know, what was our favorite beard day for Rob, for instance, last year? The answer is all of them. His beard always looks great. That's my answer.
There was a period earlier this month where I hadn't trimmed it for a while, and it was getting wild, man.
Going the full Patrick Rothfuss route where you just sort of have to push it out of the way when you sit down and stuff.
Kind of. It got to the point where I was going to have to throw it over my shoulder just to take a pee.
Nice. That is cool. Or you could part it on either side, like curtains. Just go out through the middle. We haven't had a lot of toilet related jokes in the last few minutes. That's all right. People don't come here for highbrow entertainment anyway. Mike, kicking off with you. What was your favorite book that you read in 2021?
All right. So for me, there are two books that are kind of vying for number one. First would be Legacy of the Bright Wash by Crystal Matar. That one, I don't know if it was the timing. It hit me just right. There was a lot to love in that book, and it landed at the right time, hit me in the right way. It's fucking fantastic. And the other one is The Pariah by Anthony Ryan, which for me is now my favorite Anthony Ryan book. Nice. I'm gonna say it's better than Bloodsong.
Huge. Cool.
Yeah.
So you talked about that before, and we've had both of those guests on our podcast actually, so if you do want to experience our chat with them again, just scroll back through. Keep talking about why were they the two standouts for you this year?
So Legacy of the Bright Wash, it was a combination of really, really well written characters. Her world building is like flawless. It's you sink into the city, and the whole thing really takes place in sort of in one city, and most of it in one part of the city. There's the flavor to the whole thing was fantastic. And she's got a way with, there'd be little scenes where people would like sit around and smoke a cigar and sip whiskey and talk. And they were fantastic. Like I'd read them and given, I'm kind of, weak to, open to suggestion. I mean, like I'd read the scene. I'd be like, need cigar, need whiskey.
I feel like method reading.
Oh yeah. Method reading. And for Anthony Ryan, I loved, it's like one point of view character. And it was something different for him. It kind of, he took it in some different directions from what I was sort of expecting from him. And I loved the character. I loved the way the story went. I think he set up like a really good trilogy there or series. I have no idea how many books it's going to be.
Awesome. Rob, what about you?
Okay. I've read a lot this year, so I'm going to pick like, three from different sort of like bits of the genre. I'm going to start with a sci-fi one. I've read loads of, read and listened to loads of sci-fi this year. And I'm going to pick The Expanse because I'm currently reading book 4 and I fucking love it. Apart from book 3, which sucked. Books 1, 2, and 4 so far have been absolutely amazing. There's just this, they're so easy to fall into and characterizations are so good that they just feel real. And I think it definitely helps with the fact that I love the TV show as well. So it's sort of, it's helping to fill in some of the blanks probably. But yeah, I love the way it's done in a sort of almost pseudo hard science type way, where it feels real and believable. And it's not just like, yeah, they went into hyperspace. Sure. So
they use the force like, and it solved all of their narrative problems.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just feels, it feels like a real sci-fi rather than sort of a space opera, which I kind of like. And then as a sort of like, I don't know how to class it, but I've been reading a bit of Octavia E. Butler this year. I've read Parable of the Sower and Parable of the Talents. I can't remember which way around they are, the titles. But it was the second book really hit me. The first book was good, but the second book, it just felt like it was very important. It predicted a lot of sort of like the current things that might be happening on a social political climate, and it did not shy away from showing you what things like slavery could have been like if they were in the current sort of day and age, or if they are currently in the day and age. And it was a really tough read, but I felt like it was important. So that was definitely one of my favorite books of the year, even though it was a struggle because it was tough. And then for a straight fantasy book, I will pick The Empire's Ruin by Brian Staveley, which is the first book of his latest trilogy, set in the same world as his other ones. And I thought it was brilliant. I just like, it was a proper epic fantasy with sort of multiple different characters and perspectives, and you know, like a quest to be done and then something else going on there. This side of the year, political maneuverings and all sorts. And it was absolutely fantastic, apart from one character's point of view, who I hated. But then it was made up for because it had Gwenna Sharp, and she's an absolutely fantastic heroine or character. So yeah, those would be my three books of the year, I think. I think I've read about 60% sci-fi this year. It's crazy.
That's interesting because I've probably read like more non-fiction books than I read fiction books this year, which is unusual for me. So I read 44 books this year, which is one less than however many books I read in 2020. Now, there's only like 50 minutes until midnight here, so it's not going to happen. But I was that close to being like, I'm only got 100 pages left of Dune Messiah, and it's really, really good. And I've ripped through the whole thing in like a day. Can I get that number up to the same? But anyway, it's not about the numbers. It's not about the numbers, especially since I didn't make the number. It's about the enjoyment and the experience that you had with each books. So I thought I'll give like at least one of my favorite nonfiction ones, because I think it's very useful for writers and is probably useful for a lot of the kind of mental side of the game that we were talking about in the previous episode. But probably my favorite fiction books that I read this year, Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir, author of The Martian.
That was really good.
Loved it. I just thought it was such a cool combination of everything that made The Martian great mixed in with one of the best non-human protagonists I've ever read. And the relationship that they kind of build between them is like so much emotion to it. And I feel like sci-fi can often run the risk of being about the cool concepts and about the cool world building and all the technical things. And it can sometimes struggle to capture that emotional essence. But this book just didn't have that at all. It just had everything that made The Martian great, plus way more feels. Because I think The Martian is a great book. I also think it doesn't have the same level of like emotional attachment as this. So just thought Project Hail Mary was amazing. For those of you who haven't heard of it, really quick pitch for it. Basically, Earth's sun starts getting dimmer and a group of astronauts are sent out to try to figure out why this is the case. And one of those astronauts is a high school teacher, essentially. And while he's out there, he has to understand this alien life form and also unravel the mystery of the sun. And he's doing all of this in a spaceship with extremely limited resources, requiring him to use some science to,
the shit out to of
figure
it.
That's the logo. Couldn't say it because it's the same as The Martian. But yes, that's exactly what he's trying to do. And I...
Oh, man, that has so much to answer for, that bloody phrase. Like, TV shows the world over now just going like, let's just science this thing.
Let's and science like, oh, this. Just funny stop. Science being used as a verb. Like, it upsets me, but also makes me happy at the same time. So anyway, just thought it was fantastic. It was kind of like a combination of Arrival and Castaway. Had that element too much of...
Without spoilers, but...
Yeah, okay. And also maybe a bit of Children of Time by Adrian Tchaikovsky, former guest on the show. Much like Brian Stavely as well. Yeah, just this cool thing where...
I like it.
Yeah, it's really good. It's worth checking out. Super enjoyed it. Read it towards the start of the year, so... The fact that, it's still kind of has stuck with me has been really good. So that was one of the best fiction ones. And then the other ones that were really good, I super loved Mistborn's Secret History, which the pitch for that is that it's a story that occurred at the same time as the original Mistborn trilogy, but in the side of it. And it absolutely blew my mind when I read it, because it truly was like nothing else that I'd ever read, right? I was expecting, I was like, oh, is this going to be a bit sort of fan service-y? It's just like sort of trying to, extract more emotional feels from this story that's already been done. But it just made it so much better. And it's so hard to describe without spoilers, because it's about a character who, if you've read it, you know why that character is interesting to follow. If you haven't read it, like, can't really tell you the character because it will spoil things. But I just loved it. I thought it did so many unique things. And it is, to me, the first sign of what is going to be possible with Brandon Sanderson's Cosmere as a whole. Because it's a book where he starts, like, he's fully liberated to kind of explore all the things that he's been setting up and foreshadowing in the background. His Cosmere, if you're not familiar, is like this shared universe that he has done across multiple book series. There's been probably like 20 books written in the Cosmere so far. He reckons he's about halfway through it. And yeah, I just found it very inspiring, because I was like, this feels like I am reading something totally new. Even the story is like, I guess, a fairly standardly structured story and everything, but just the fact of what it was and how it fit into his other books, in my experience at least, felt like this really new thing. So I super enjoyed that. But I think the best fiction book from last year, which I kind of debated as to like, is this the best, is this the worst, because it took me probably well over a year to read, because I was listening to it in audiobook form, but the journey was well worth it. And that is Best Served Cold by Joe Abercrombie. Very late to the party, but I, yeah, really adored this. And it was kind of cool that I listened to the audiobook over the course of like a whole year, because it almost felt like this TV series where I was sort of returning to, you know, do an hour of it every week or so over the course of a year.
TV series were like that.
Yeah. And yeah, it just the characters within it were crazy. It's insane how Abercrombie can do this thing, and it frustrates me to no end, where nothing happens and yet you walk away from it and you're like, that was the best interaction I've ever read. Like, there's so many scenes where it's just characters in a room, you know, and fantasy is supposed to be about the big epic battles and about the magic and about the world building and all these things. And Abercrombie's like, nope, just going to have them sitting in a room and you're going to like it way more than any of those other things. So take my hat off to him. Yeah, amazing book that was just like such a good cast of seven characters. If you haven't read it, basically it's a revenge story told with Abercrombie's signature grit. So yeah, really, really, really enjoyed that. So yeah, those are probably the three big ones for me. What I will do is on Goodreads, I basically like post every time I read a book and do a little review on there. So I'll post a link to my 2021 reads shelf in the show notes. So if you want to check out the other ones, I can do that as well. And Rob and Mike, if you have any links to, I don't know if you track your books, but if you do,
I do the same on Goodreads.
Yep.
I do reviews for most of them. Some of them are longer, some of them are shorter. So.
I'm not on Goodreads anymore. I had a bad day and went slightly psychotic.
Yeah, fair. So
many reviews of your own books. It's
yeah. So Rob, if you want to like send me a link to your Goodreads thing, I can put that in the show notes as well. So yeah, you guys can check that out. I do have one nonfiction book I'd like to talk briefly about, but do you guys have any nonfiction things that you would like to discuss first?
I read any nonfictions. Empire of the Summer Moon, about the Comanche Indians. Fucking fantastic. That easily the best nonfiction book I read in several years.
Cool.
Yeah.
What was so good about it?
It was a sort of more blunt look at American history, with less of the sort of like sugar coating on interactions. On sure. Both sides.
And, yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, yes, this whole thing was like really brutal on both sides. And actually, weirdly, it was a hugely offensive. That's the wrong word. Influential. That's better. On Norilska Groans, because we did a shit ton of background world building that never made it into the book. Like there's did notes for an entire separate continent for Comancheria. Which hopefully maybe someday we'll get back to and do some of that, you know, bigger world building stuff. But anyway, awesome book.
That's pretty cool.
Empire of the Summer Moon.
Empire of the Summer Moon. Amazing title. Love that title. What about you, Rob? Are you a nonfiction guy? Not really.
I don't really read much in the way of nonfiction. I prefer to consume via watching things rather than reading them. If I'm reading, I'm generally sitting down to read like science fiction or fantasy personally. But I mean, there are a few books that I'd like to get to. But it's finding the time, because like I read to sort of escape. So when I want to sit down and read, I don't want to read about the horrible things that humanity have done. That being said, I really want to read a book that I've found on Mesopotamia. So who knows, eventually.
Big fan of Mesopotamia. One of the cool ancient civilizations of the world, and just a sick sounding name as well. Nice. Yeah. So in terms of like this, I feel like I read so many good nonfiction books last year, and I have written about them on my Goodreads, but probably the best one is, can I get it?
Reach for that book. Find it. Dead.
There we go.
Coding in C++.
The absolute best nonfiction book that I read last year, and one of the best, if not the best nonfiction books I've read in my entire life, is this bad boy here, Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. Essentially, it is the diary of a Roman emperor from 2000 years ago that was just written to himself, trying to like figure out how to be a better leader. And
does each day start in, Dear Diary?
Gladiator.
Correct. He was in Gladiator. He's the old dude in Gladiator.
He's the old king in Gladiator.
Who gets killed.
Yeah,
you're right. I've been meaning to rewatch Gladiator ever since I saw this. I'm like, oh, I want to see it again. Yeah, so it doesn't quite start Dear Diary, but there's some bits that are pretty much like that. And yeah, this is just a book where I have just, if you're watching this on YouTube, I'm just holding it up and going through it now, but I've just highlighted so many pages. I don't think I've shown any of them. Yeah, there's like so many highlights and notes that I have put through this. And the, like, pretty much every page, you know, I've folded down the corners on it because there was a particularly profound quote on it.
Sinner.
Yeah, I know, right? This is one bad book.
Don't fold your pages. You get those little post-it little note things.
Tabs.
The little tabs. So, you know.
We just lost half our listeners right there.
This is the moment when the show gets canceled. When I am revealed to be a corner folded down. Because
Jed folds pages.
Yeah. So anyway, it's been a good run, guys. But yeah, it's just an incredible book because it makes you realize that fundamentally humans don't change. There's a passage in it where he says something along the lines of, you know, you desperately desire the approval of people who kick themselves every 10 minutes and who you despise. And there's just so many things like that where you realize that human behavior has just not changed at all. We're all still the same. We're all still grappling with the same problems. And I think when you're grappling with an old problem, it makes a lot of sense to go back to an old book. And particularly relevant right now, because when he was emperor, there was a thing called the, I think, Antony Plague, which was basically like the exact pandemic we're experiencing right now, except in a country that didn't really have, you know, the modern medical stuff we had. So
in the US then.
Topical.
Yeah, I guess so. None of us are, well, I mean, you're in Canada, none of us are in USA, so don't know how true that is, but yeah, it could be.
Well, you're in Canada. No, Canada isn't the US. You fine?
Yeah, I was like, I don't think it is.
Quiet, you freaking Kiwi.
Hey, brew. That's my Kiwi accent, by the way. More of that could be obtained later. But yeah, there's just a great line in it, right? Where he, you know, he's obviously aware of the plague. He's the ruler trying to deal with it. And he's got this line where he's like, every night when I tuck my child to sleep, remind myself that that could be the last time I do that. And there's a lot of things in the book that are, you know, all about remembering your own mortality and how that is actually a tremendous source of joy in the long term, because it makes you really appreciate what you have right now. And yeah, just when it comes to, you know, I think writing can be a very stressful and difficult thing. And this book has given me at least an extremely good mental toolkit to kind of deal with adversity in all forms. Because yeah, it's hard to imagine much more adversity than being, you know, like the most influential leader in the world at that time, having to deal with this extremely bad plague, having to deal with all the other things that would have been thrown at him. And yeah, like the fact that that wisdom has been preserved for 2000 years is absolutely extraordinary to me. And yeah, like I don't think many of our leaders will still be remembered in 2000 years, let alone 100 years. So the fact that, you know, this guy's kind of stuck around that long. Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe they will be, right. But maybe it won't be for good reasons. And yeah, so really recommend it. It's a pretty short book. And it's very like, it's not a cohesive thing. Like it's just, you know, episodic little paragraphs that he was writing to himself or whatever. Yeah. I recommend the translation I have is the Gregory Hayes translation. There's like a bunch of different ones and I have heard that the quality varies widely on those, but yeah, the Gregory Hayes translation was pretty good. Highly, highly recommend it. And it's something that I've probably reread like probably 5 times over the course of the last year. And just, you know, it's really easy to just pick up and flick to a random page and right there will be, you know, the answer to something you've been struggling with, which I think is a remarkable thing that these books can do.
Cool. So it helps you realize that we're all just cucumbers with anxiety.
Yeah, I guess so. I suppose you've outwitted Marcus Aurelius. Nice work. Yeah, you could have written the book for him.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, nice. Yeah, but I really do want to rewatch Gladiator now that I've read this book by him, even though I'm sure it's not even the same, but yeah. And was that Anthony Hopkins who played him?
Nope. It was
Richard Harris, right?
Yeah, I think
Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is a perfect segue to the next segment, talking about our favorite movies of last year. So doesn't have to be, you can do movies or TV series, but doesn't have to be stuff that released in 2021, but just favorite things that you saw last year. Who wants to kick it off?
Well, I'm just going to kick it off by saying Arcane.
That was very good.
I absolutely loved it. I thought it was, I know a little bit about League of Legends, but not much really. I pretty much went into blind, apart from knowing a few characters, but absolutely loved it. I thought it was a fantastic, pretty classically told fantasy story. A lot of the elements if you read fantasy or watch fantasy, you'll have seen before, but I just think it was so, so well done. And the characters were just like good and bad. You understood them and you felt like you knew them, and the world that they created in it was just, it was vibrant and intriguing, and it was just, yeah, everything about it just sucked me in and wouldn't let go. And I'm busy watching it again for a second time now, and just sort of like picking up on extra little details and everything, and loving it. And it really makes me want to get back into writing some epic fantasy as well.
Nice. I haven't seen it. I've heard amazing things about it. That sounds pretty cool. So it's good it's good. Like, so you don't have any sort of experience with League of Legends and you still enjoyed it heaps.
Yeah. To be honest, I most people I know who have watched it don't really know anything about the game, because you don't need to be honest. It's a story. Go into it blind and you'll enjoy the hell out of it.
Cool. Mike?
I had no idea what year it came out. The Spider-Man, was it Into the Multiverse?
Into the Spider-Verse. Am I getting
that title right? Is Spider-Verse? Is that what it is? I can't remember. That was fantastic.
The animated one.
The animated one.
Yeah.
The rest of them are kind of whatever. This was a pretty shit year for superhero stuff. And then super recently, Don't Look Up.
In terms how good.
Fucking fantastic.
How good. I want to talk about
the scarily plausible films I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was chilling. Just how plausible. You're like, yeah, sadly. I mean, that spun me off into this whole like, oh, this is why the Fermi paradox exists and social media is the death of civilization.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny. Don't Look Up. Amazing. Absolutely loved it. And then it was hilarious how the movie, which is all about criticizing the media, all the media reviews I've seen online have been like, this movie's really bad and you shouldn't watch it because it's just like up itself and it's all elitist. No, it was
brilliant.
I loved it so much. Brilliant. And how good to see Leonardo DiCaprio like in a weird, ugly haircut and strange outfit and like having kids that are older than his partners in real life. It was so funny. I was like, this man can act.
He's fantastic, is Leonardo DiCaprio. He's great, one of those actors who does actually act. I find like you quite often get to like two different versions of actors. You get like actors like, we'll go over a similar sort of like style. Ryan Reynolds, who just plays the same character and everything. He just plays Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah.
Well, his films are watchable, but he just plays Ryan Reynolds. And then you get Leonardo DiCaprio, who he's almost unrecognizable in every single role he plays. He's just so different. Absolutely fantastic. And he does a hell of a job.
Don't Look Up was great. What was it for you, Mike? What kind of... Oh, sorry, Rob, do you have something else to say?
No, it's an excellent film.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah, what did you like about it, Mike, apart from the scary realism of it?
Yeah, I mean, that was really it. I loved the fact that the scientists kind of didn't know how to interact in this world. In the sort of like the media frenzy, basically got sucked in and distracted. And I don't want to give spoilers, but like the scene where they're sitting around and kind of going, we did everything we could, right? Right?
That hits hard.
As like, well, obviously not.
Yeah.
But they're fantastic.
And a wonderful metaphor for climate change.
Wait, it's about climate change? I thought it was just about a big asteroid. What?
I read a good article on it the other day, which was just like they were writing it during the first sort of like stages of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And some of the shit that was coming out from world leaders and the like, they were looking at it going, we have to make this script crazier. It's not crazy enough.
Yeah, they're like, some world leader told us to drink bleach. We can't put that in the movie. That'll be too unrealistic.
Madness. Yeah. They're looking at like this absolutely insane situation scenario going on and everything like that. And they're like, what's happening is worse.
Well, I forget who said it, but there was this funny quote. I think it was by some director of a similar movie where they were like, the problem with fiction is that it has to be realistic, but reality is seldom realistic. And that's why it sucks doing fiction, because you have to conform to realistic expectations. But in real life, it doesn't. It can be as unrealistic as it wants, and it often is.
Yeah.
It's just such a weird paradox. I love Don't Look Up. I thought it was great. Highly recommend. Mike, I want to talk about Into the Spider-Verse, though, because I watched that this year as well, and I was blown away by it. I adored that movie so much. I've always loved the Spider-Man movies, but this one just was on a whole nother level.
For me, like all of the early Spider-Man movies, I hated. I thought they were all garbage. The more recent ones, I'm kind of okay with. I'm not a huge superhero guy, and I'm certainly not a huge Superman, Spider-Man fan. So I really went into that with no expectations. It was like, I think we were desperate for something to watch, and I watched it with my daughter. And it was really just because I'm like, it'll be safe for her. Cool. Great. Whatever. And we watched it, and I was just, fucking hell, this is really good. That one blew me away.
Yeah.
Really hits you with the feels.
Yeah. And the scene where he takes that leap of faith as well. Like one of my favorite, like cinematic moments I think I've ever seen. Like get chills in that moment. It's great. It's just awesome. What was it like? What kind of made it like so good for you, do you reckon? Especially considering you didn't like the other Spider-Man movies.
Yeah. So there was like just on the visual side, like I love visual movies. If you can have a like kind of shitty movie, and if it looks amazing, you'll probably keep me watching just because I'm like, oh shit, this is beautiful. Like some of the more recent Star Wars movies, which are absolute shit, but like just visually stunning.
Yeah.
But anyway, so
like Dune, visually, which is 90% just here's a panning shot of some landscape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Visually, and then, do you want to see an IMAX shot of a knife? Here you go.
Like it looked amazing. And I love that it kind of just sort of like ditched a lot of the, it let go of the whole, you know, white New Yorker Spider-Man thing. And it didn't take itself too seriously. I mean, there's a freaking like spider pig,
yeah.
You know, which
and Nick Cage.
Yeah. And it was, yeah. I love that it didn't take itself too seriously. It was a great story. It hit the feels, you know, it was, you know, family, and there were sort of like lessons in there. And I think it was probably closer to what Spider-Man was probably originally supposed to be about. You know, rather than like, oh, here's the big bad guy for this movie, and it's gonna devolve into a fist fight. Surprise!
It's the usual formula that a lot of the superhero films have moved into, which is very, very predictable and formulaic, I felt.
Yeah.
Whereas this was, it was quite different.
Into the Spider-Verse actually motivated me to start doing the practice of writing down the storytelling lessons that I get from each movie I watched. Because I watched that about 6 months ago, pretty much in the middle of the year. And I loved it so much that I was like, man, that's the kind of thing I want to be able to write one day. You know, something that is like that level of emotional movingness within me and is just such a incredible story. So I actually wrote down a couple of writing lessons from it. If you guys would like me to share a couple of them now. What was the first one? I think the biggest lesson I kind of took away from that from a storytelling perspective is that it just created this like really, really incredibly fun world that you want to be part of. And I think the stories that are the most appealing to me, at least, are the ones that do create a world where you're like, I want that. I want to go into that world. I want to experience the things that that character is experiencing. And I think Spider-Man is just a great character for that, because you're like, yeah, like that would be awesome to just have this, like, you know, sort of thing where you can swing through this awesome city. And particularly with this one as well, you know, team up with this awesome ensemble of other spider people, or not even people, spider things. And yeah, I just thought it did such a good job of that, giving you this world that is so much fun to be part of. And then probably the other really massive storytelling lesson from that is how well it kind of synchronized its plot points to happen at the same moment. So the same moment that the main character decides to, you know, sort of take it seriously. What did I write down exactly? Yeah, like the moment where the main character decides to like take it seriously and to commit to this and to overcome his inhibitions is the same moment that he kind of like, you know, learns to really use his powers. And it's the same moment that he takes that leap off. And yeah, it made me realize that a lot of my favorite moments in stories are these kind of not moments where you have these three or four different plot threads or questions that all get answered in this one pivotal moment. And I think the more that you can kind of combine those things into just that one moment, you know, towards the sort of end of a story, that really leads to these hugely epic scenes. And it's the reason why when he takes that leap of faith off the skyscraper and there's that awesome visual of him, you know, falling down towards the city below, but the camera's reversed, so he's flying up instead. That moment is just like so satisfying because it represents the culmination of these three different moments throughout the story. So yeah,
it's internalizing and externalizing the character development at the same time.
That's exactly right.
To bring it back to one of Fletcher's most hated authors, it's something that Brandon Sanderson's really good at.
Oh yeah, that's why I love the guy.
No. There are many authors who I hate far more than Brandon
Sanderson. We're getting to him. We're getting to him, Rob. We're seeing a new side of Fletcher this year. He's decided to be nice to authors that I really want to have on the show one day. Yeah, I think he does that great. It's in a sense a really easy thing to do when you're just talking about it theoretically, but a lot of stories don't quite get it right. But when you can get it that, yeah, you know, the character's internal growth is coinciding with a big external change in the plot, and then there's also something happening in the world at the same time as well, like, yeah, that's just the trifecta. When you can get all those things to line up, and then when you make it tie into the theme somehow, it just leads to amazing storytelling moments. Yeah. I think
the other thing now thinking about it that it did really well was set up really obvious moments and then fuck them sideways, so it didn't work the way you sort of expected it to, and you know, there'd be this huge build to a slap the spider, that's it, off they wander, you know. And there were a couple of scenes like that where they build to you know, it's like, here we're obviously building towards what's going to happen next, and you know what's going to happen next, and then they just take off sideways.
Yeah.
That they did really well.
It's one of the advantages of
reader expect or listener viewer whatever expectations.
Trope fucking.
I heard that term takes off.
So. Should.
That's pretty cool. But then at the same time, they also play into them in ways that are really satisfying when it happens, right? And it is a very classic hero's journey. Person goes from being an outcast with no real powers to becoming someone who is confident within their powers and themselves. And it's just, yeah, it encapsulates everything that makes Spider-Man as a character great, I think, while also broadening the possibilities of who Spider-Man can be. And I think that's a pretty cool takeaway from it. So yeah, I thought that was great. Could talk about Into the Spider-Verse all day.
It's not about who Spider-Man can be. It's the fact that we are all Spider-Man.
Yes.
Spider-Man is all of us.
That's it. And there's that great scene where it's like all the, like at a pivotal moment, there's like a big crowd and you see everyone wearing the Spider-Man costume, right? And, you know, the main character is there in the actual Spider-Man costume. and people are just like, oh, cool costume. And it's cool because you're like, oh, there's like the sense of community to it, which is really cool. Yeah, I love that. So in terms of my favorite movie, like Dune is the obvious choice. Dune is the obvious choice. I freaking loved it. It was great. And I've seen it twice. I've listened to the soundtrack probably like 20 times. Yeah, I just thought it was amazing. But, you know, in a bid to try to pick something a little bit less mainstream to hopefully broaden the discussion a little bit, although I would love to talk Dune briefly because I absolutely loved it, I would probably say that I'm just looking at the list of things that I've written down here. Something that I really enjoyed this year. Damn, I was going to pick another
three notes just yet.
You're weirdly organized. It kind of freaks me out.
There's a lot of notes here.
There's a reason why you run this podcast and not me.
We can't see it, but like opposite him right now, he's probably just got this like wall just full of post-it notes of like lines connecting everything, like a proper serial killer.
Yeah. Or the person who's investigating the serial killer. I mean, let's not typecast here. Yeah, I think I'll just list a couple really quickly. So Last Night in Soho was amazing. Not sure if any of you guys have seen it.
So far, I haven't seen any of these movies. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, it's great. So it's by Edgar Wright, the guy who did Shaun the Dead, Hot Fuzz. Totally different. It's a psychological horror that is sort of like Midnight in Paris, but demented. So fashion designer goes to London, goes to Soho, and when she goes to sleep at night, she experiences the 1960s in Soho, and she becomes really enamored with this dancer who epitomizes everything that she aspires to be in the 1960s. And then things start to get horrific, and it's this really interesting and quite horrifying examination of like the sacrifices one needs to make or is pressured to make in pursuit of their art. And the visuals are absolutely gorgeous. There's just so many like hallucinatory dream sequences, which are amazing. So that was really good. Gangs in New York. I think I talked about that on a previous podcast. It's not really like a non-mainstream movie by any means, but I just thought it was very epic fantasy-esque in the scope of what it was creating, because you're kind of seeing hundreds of characters in this really vividly imagined area. And you see them over the course of several years, I think maybe even a few decades potentially. And just had like one of my all-time favorite antagonists in Bill the Butcher, played by Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, that is just a character that, you know, is one of those rare things where they feel totally full and like they have written themselves through the quality of the actor's performance or whatever. So that was really good. But then probably the favorite movie that I read saw this year, probably American Hustle, which no one seems to have heard of it. Have either of you guys heard of it?
I've heard of it, but I've never watched it.
So
yeah, I heard of it, never
seen it. Yeah, I don't understand how though, because it is, so it has Christian Bale, Bradley Cooper, Amy Adams, Jennifer Lawrence, Jeremy Renner. Who else? It just has like a massive cast of these hugely good actors. Christian Bale put on like, I don't know, 40 kilos for the role, because why not? and he looks so totally unrecognizable. Yeah, that's just what Christian Bale does. Saw a good meme a while ago where it's like Christian Bale puts on 20,000 pounds to play the sandworm in Dune, and I was like, yeah, I'm not even surprised. but it's
five
just
extra sets of teeth, because why not?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you gotta go for it. But American Hustle is a crime movie that's like also a con, that is also like a period piece at the same time. So Christian Bale is playing this con man, basically, who gets caught by this FBI agent. And the FBI agent is like, I'll let you off if you can help me expose these five other con men who are doing bigger cons than you. But what it's classic, right? But then Christian Bale starts conning the FBI agent as they go through the con on the other con artists. And the movie is also conning you at the same time. So basically everyone is conning everyone else, and you don't know what to believe. And it's just a ton of fun. And yeah, it really felt like such an extremely fun experience. So yeah, highly recommend it. And it, yeah, I went into it with knowing nothing about it and loved it so much. So really enjoyed that. Yeah, so those are my picks. Yeah. What else do we have to talk about for our faves of 2021? This episode's gone for a bit.
I was just thinking, like, I could talk about fave computer games, and I'm like, I barely play computer games anymore. I keep wanting to, and then it's like, not.
Rob's New Year's resolution, to procrastinate more by playing more computer games.
I really should, like, and I these days I just sort of, like, I pick up games which are kind of almost mindless and more mechanical, in a way to sort of try and switch my brain off, so I don't play like ones with like big storylines. So it's more just like, yeah, I play a card game. It's you just play cards. It's cool.
But on a screen, yay! What about you, Mike? Any other, I don't know, story related things that were really good from last year?
No, like Rob, I mean, I haven't played computer games in ages. I recently, in an attempt to stave off burnout, dug the PS3 out of the dusty box in the basement and like went through the games. I'm like, I like sniper games. I'm like, yeah, I kind of would like to shoot someone in the head. you know, but I played for 10 minutes and was like, I'm just wasting my fucking time. I need to get back to writing.
Yeah.
But that's another episode.
That's another episode, yes. How to play video games guilt-free, which probably for people who are starting out writing is maybe like such a weird problem to consider. Because when you're starting out, you're like, I'll do anything except write. Like, how is this a problem that you struggle to do a fun thing that is not writing? But yeah, after a couple of years of the grind set, you're a bit like, yeah.
You see, authors on like Facebook groups or they're going, I don't know how to continue my book. I just get to a point and I stop, and I'm like, how do you stop? Please tell me.
What is stop? Do not know this word.
Yeah. I mean, every time I see like some, you know, new young writer talking about, you know, all the coolest, latest games they've played, and I'm like, good, keep playing. This way you're not competition.
Brutal.
Enjoy your new PS5.
See,
get Mike, the new game. Fail to put out a book once again this year.
Don't take away my royalties. See, Mike,
I know it's not a competition, but
but Mike is the alpha here, and no one will compete against him. You're correct.
It's not a competition, but there are competition.
There are competition, or there is competition.
Ah.
Yeah, you're a writer. I'm sure whatever you said is right.
My podcast, come on,
Mike. I'm playing 5D chess against you, buddy, because I'm not playing video games. I'm writing video games. So the idea is, out of guilt and a sense of obligation, you'll play it and test it once, and it will suck you in, and therefore you'll never be able to write.
People send me books and try and guilt me into reading them. Like, I'm an emotionless rock.
This is different because it's a video game and it's something you can perceive to be doing to recover from burnout.
You say that, but wasn't your favorite book of the year something that somebody sent you?
Yeah, it was. No, actually, no, I bought it.
Oh, okay.
I read almost none of the books that people send me for free. And I only read the books that I buy and want to read.
Yeah.
And I am actually I'm failing really badly at even reading those. I have 15 or 20 paperbacks sitting on the shelf that I like bought, and I'm probably never going to read them.
Mine are all down here. And there's another stack somewhere else as well. So.
Again, this is another episode, but when, you know, the last book I picked up, I picked it up in the middle of editing End of Sorrow. So I start reading it and I start editing it. And I'm like, no, this person doesn't write anything like me. And it's annoying. I'm like, no, dude, you can't read it. Put it away.
And then you're like, here, J.R.R. Tolkien, here are your edits on Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. It sucks all the joy out of reading when you can't get out of your own editor voice. And you're like, no, that's an extra word. You should have reworded this sentence. You need to tighten this up. Your prose is fucking sloppy as shit. You know, like, that's not fun. You can't read like
the same
that.
Sentence start.
Oh, that one gets me. That one gets me.
I say, well, yeah. I got sent 5 books by publishers this year. Nice. Not even indie, like by actual publishers.
Yeah.
5 books. Only 2 of them were through the podcast.
Publishers, yeah, if you're hearing this, Rob has indicated his willingness to advance.
I read all 5 as well. So
you did? Oh shit. Wow.
Well done.
I think I read 1 of the 5-ish books I got from publishers.
Is that Maleficent 7? Did you read that one?
No, that one I didn't get.
You don't get it?
Like Ryan Anthony, Anthony Ryan, Brian Anthony. He sends me all his books. So that one I read. But like, I've got a pile of other publisher books, which sadly I didn't read because reasons.
Because they didn't include a crisp $100 bill inside the front cover.
Dude, you got to put the money in the front cover, baby. Yeah.
Send your books to me, not Fletcher, because he doesn't read them.
Yeah, sadly. True.
Yeah, send them to me as well, if you can stomach the shipping to Australia fee, which I think not they all can. Publishers can. Because
yeah, man, you've got to hire a kangaroo to find you. It's so hard work.
It's difficult. It's difficult. I mean, it shouldn't be difficult. All you should do is drill a hole through the, like, just off the coast of Northeast America, and that hole should emerge right next to my city, because we're on the exact opposite side of the world.
Yeah, but you've got to avoid the mole people.
Ah, classic mole people stuffing things up. Really inconvenient.
They're there, ma'am.
Yeah. Wizards, Warriors, and Words cancelled for being anti-mole people. That's how we go down, boys. That's how we go down. Anyway, I think
like
the fact that
just keeps saying this is how we're getting cancelled. I think he's trying to slip something in here.
I'm trying to get ahead of it, right? It's kind of like if you accidentally start a fire, the best thing you can do is try to point out the fire first, so that you're like, clearly I am not the one who started this.
Whoever smelt it dealt it.
Was it?
Quick, blame somebody else. It was him.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, how come you were able to smell it before him? Does that mean he ventriloquist farted in your direction somehow and didn't come?
I mean, to be honest, Jed, your major problem is you never accidentally start a fire. It's always on purpose.
You don't just find yourself walking along, randomly throwing 2 lumps of flint in the air, and then they accidentally collide with each other and sparks fly from them onto nearby bushes.
You have matches and lighters these days, man. Come on.
It's so much easier to be a pyro now.
That's true. Anyway, yeah, don't cancel us for not liking the mole people. I personally am a big fan of the mole people. I've always thought they've been doing good things down in the center of the earth, I think. Yeah. on that note.
Well, we're not going to milk this any further.
Not going to milk. I don't think there's any milk left. I don't think there was any milk in the first place.
I mean, to be honest, I think you killed this joke, buried it, then dug it up again and set fire to it.
That's it. And then scattered the ashes in the center of the earth to be consumed by the molten core. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. If you've enjoyed this show, be sure to leave us a rating. If you listen on Spotify have just included a podcast rating feature. So if you're enjoying this show, this is where the fun begins, guys. So if you have been enjoying this show and you listen on Spotify, feel free to tap and rate us. You can choose any number that is 5, 5, or 5. No other numbers are permissible. Spotify will make you think that you can choose other numbers from 1 to 5. It's not true. It only actually counts if you press a 5. So just make sure you press that. Otherwise, it won't work. And I don't know, maybe your Spotify account could just get deleted. Who knows? I'm not saying that will happen for sure, but we can't rule it out as a possibility. So just to be safe, make sure you hit the 5. Just to be safe.
I think Jed's threatening our listeners. He's really trying to get us canceled.
This is going downhill fast.
It's not a threat. I'm just saying, I'm just laying out things that could happen in the future, giving people options, making sure they're aware of the potential. And it's up to them to do whatever they want with that information. I'm just a messenger here. Just a messenger.
Moving along.
Moving along. Thanks, everybody, for listening. be sure to rate us on Spotify or anything else. And let us know what topics you'd be interested in us covering this year. Hopefully we can get some cool guests on. Hopefully we can have some good episodes. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.